Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Our time is now with LSU basketball.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
One way or another, we're going to make history.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
I came here to win. We're going to win immediately.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council, Boudreaux's Electrical Services, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Case Kieschnick and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo. Todd Horn has the night off, and Case Kieschnick, our producer, and we're glad you can be a part of our show here tonight because we're going to spend a lot of time talking about an iconic figure in LSU athletics and in the university in general, and that is Skip Bertman, who, of course, passed away last Friday at the age of 88 after battling heart issues. Of course, our own Glenn Gilbo wrote the biography of Skip, Everything Matters in Baseball, the Skip Bertman Story. So we're going to have some terrific guests on over the next couple of hours. Ryan Terriel, Doug Thompson, Todd Walker, Didi Bro. We'll also hear from Mark Etheridge of D1 Baseball. We'll all get some great thoughts on what Skip meant to them personally, what he meant to the university, the athletic department, and so many student athletes that came through that school. We'll also talk a little football. We'll probably get into a little bit on the Jaden Daniels drama, even though I think that's been pretty much played out, and we'll get into some maybe other topics as well. We're getting close to the start of a new school year. In fact, Monday, and there are still just 4 official LSU men's basketball players on the roster. So we may just we may touch on that as well. We really want
keyword official.
Yeah, official. There's a bunch of other guys that are out there that appear to be heading to LSU or will be playing for the Tigers, but we honestly still do not know. But figured we dedicate this show to Skip Bertman, and Glenn, you got the opportunity to know him at a level that many people did not get to know him. And that is, you wrote a book with the man. What was that experience like?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I would say it was one of the highlights of my sports writing days.
Yeah.
to get to do that book, and it made it easier to do the book since I lived through it. You know,
right.
I didn't have to study a lot, though. I did have to catch up somewhat and get the details right. But no, sitting with Skip at his kitchen table. For many times over about 2 or 3 years, interviewing him over various periods of his career, often with Dan Canterbury standing there too.
Yeah,
it was just a lot of fun and very informative. And Skip had such an impressive memory and mind, and he was always the smartest guy in the room. When him and Saban were in the same room, it was close, but and he really liked Saban a lot,
yeah.
and vice versa. But it was just really a treasure to get to interview him so much, and then sitting next to him for a lot of the book signings outside Alex Box and at a couple of Barnes and Nobles and at a small Catholic girls' school outside Lafayette that we got was for Christmas, which was pretty good, but. He was just a fun guy to be around, and I'm really going to miss him.
And again, the book, Everything Matters in Baseball, the Skip Bertman Story. What, going back to it and going through the book, and as you mentioned, you lived through it. You covered a lot of Skip's teams. What were maybe a couple things that when you went into the book and you said, you know what, I didn't really know this about Skip?
Yeah, it was amazing how many players, without being asked, would bring up the fact that Skip could tell the future in games,
yeah.
You know, like this guy that the other pitcher, he's going to be done in the fourth inning, or this guy right here, the way he's swinging, he's going to pop up to second base, or You might go 0-for-3 in this game, Brad Cressy, but you'll get a hit in the last inning. Yeah, I mean, he said stuff like that.
Doug Thompson's really got a story like that. We'll have him, when we get him on later on in this hour, we'll have him recite that story as well. He had something very similar when Doug had a very bad outing. I believe it was against Alabama.
Right, right.
And he pulled Doug early and said, I'm going to need you tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
And Doug was like, what are you talking about?
This game's over. Yeah. Yeah, that's in the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is uncanny. And it didn't just happen a couple of times. I mean, it happened a lot. He just really knew the game so well. I mean, he was coaching when he was 12, in youth leagues, and he just always did it. So he was just a brilliant guy.
And when he became athletic director, and I wasn't around in the 90s. I was living in a different state. I got to know Skip more. I covered his last season here, which I really am glad that I was here for at least one season to get a sense of what it was like and to interact with him in post-game interviews and so forth. But I knew him more as the athletic director. And I still think, and I know Nick Saban talked about it, on Matt Moscona's show last Friday, when good get there by Matt to get Coach Saban on. But for Skip to get the Tradition Fund approved and get it approved by the LSU Board of Supervisors and get that in place, which changed the how LSU athletics is funded. And it really put LSU, as Nick said in the interview, it put LSU towards a path of success.
Right.
Because LSU was so far behind the other schools when it came to funding athletic programs, because they didn't have a personal seat license or the Tradition Fund, as LSU would call it.
Yeah, they were exaggerating, but Skip used to say, we can't do any more cake sales, you know? we got to go big time.
We
can't have car washes like at that high school and bring it on. You know, they actually had to come up with a sophisticated financial stream, which they're doing now.
Right.
Again, somewhat different. But yeah, Alabama had already had a ticket revenue plan for several years before LSU got theirs going. And Skip and Dan Radakovich and Herb Vincent and Scott Woodward, you know, and Virg Ausberry, they all got
Mark Emmert, I guess, into it
Mark,
as well.
Mark Emmert was too. And they were planning it for a couple of years. And you know, timely hitting, Skip always said.
Right?
They sold it in August of 2003 to everybody. There was a lot of people disagreeing with it.
Yeah.
The board voted for it, and then they won the national championship, and they sent out ticket order sales 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
So it worked like a dream.
Yes, it did. It did. It certainly did. And as many people said, it was really the only person that could have maybe gotten that thing across the finish line, if you would, or across the goal line, was Skip.
Right.
Because people trusted him that this was the right thing to do.
And Skip just had a lot of charm, you know. He that's why he was so well liked. He knew how to speak to people with respect, and he could be funny, and he just had the personality that some athletic directors at LSU over the years that they just didn't have.
And
they got unpopular, even though they weren't bad guys. They just didn't know how to do it in public. And Skip was just a master at speaking to people. Of course, that's all he had been doing since 83 when he took over. He was speaking to Kiwanis clubs and what have you about baseball. So he was just a natural speaker.
Yeah, you couldn't go from one personality like Skip Bertman to Joe Oliva. Two different people.
No question.
And that's, I think, what hurt Joe quite a bit during his time.
Right.
Because Skip was a guy I could call on the cell phone. Tell me about what you think about this. You know, Joe Oliva, you got to go through six people before you eventually get a hold of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, to me, is something that I'll always also respect out of him as well. I mean, he'd be driving around, you call him up, Skip, what do you think about this? Well, you know, then he'd give you 7 minutes of great audio of it, and the transparency of it was awesome. Well, let's take our first break here, Glenn, and we'll get to our first guest, and it's going to be former LSU middle infielder Ryan Terrio, who, of course, was on Skip's last national championship team. We'll talk to the Riot when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
All right, we're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo, and Case Kieschnick, our producer. Let's bring in our first guest as we're spending most of the show talking about one of the most influential people that have ever been involved with the LSU campus, and that is Skip Bertman. Ryan Terrio played for Skip, was on Skip's last national championship team in 2000, and Ryan joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio. Ryan, thanks a lot for spending some time with us tonight. How you doing?
My pleasure, guys. Thank y'all for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on. You know, you were a Baton Rouge kid, so did you have any interaction with Skip before you got on campus, and what was it like after kind of growing up and seeing and hearing about this guy, and then all of a sudden, you know, as you're a freshman at LSU, he's your head coach?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I grew up going to coaches' baseball camps out at Alec Box. I have a picture of me when I was 5 years old sitting on his knee at my mom's house. And then Skip Bertman's Grand Slam over there in the Industrialplex was a staple for us. You know, I'd spent many hours in there hitting off of his pitching machines that he had in there. So, you know, I was very familiar with Skip. And then, you know, growing up here in Baton Rouge, man, the few classes ahead of me, you know, those guys were my idols, the Patrick Coogans of the world and Ben McDonald and, you know, Dan Guillory and Russ Johnson. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But being familiar with those guys, it was just such a pleasure to you know, to live out everybody's dream, truthfully, that's from Baton Rouge, and that's to play for the Tigers.
Ryan, hey, this is Glenn. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, Glenn.
Does anything like really stick out in your mind that he told you advice wise, maybe as a player or after your playing days?
You know, obviously losing Skip hurts and very influential in my life as well as many others. You know, I'm not the only one, right? But since Skip's passing, man, I've really reflected, Glenn, on kind of some of his core principles and things that he lived his life by and he coached his teams by, and, you know, trust and love for your teammates and, you know, respect for everybody. And then, you know, the visualization piece that, you know, all three of those things translate into everyday life. And, you know, Skip used them to win baseball games, but, you know, in reality, I think he was teaching us some life skills that are just second to none. You know, as far as anything in particular, you know, he held me to a high standard personally. You know, I can't think of one instance where he said something, the light bulb just went off, because, I mean, Glenn, you've been around him. It was every day, you know, I mean, there was something every day that you could write down in a journal and then read it every morning. So, but it has given me a chance to reflect on that. I mean, we all have our lives to live, and you get, as further away you get from being a player, you know, the more you kind of forget those things. But, you know, the last week or so, I mean, I've really been kind of reflecting on that, and it's amazing how he influenced me.
Talking to Ryan Terrio here on Tiger Rag Radio. Well, speaking of visualization, Ryan, that was so big on that 2000 team. And I remember I was just rereading your quotes in the Skip book where you scored the winning run in the 2000 National Championship game, and you threw your helmet almost exactly like Armando Rios threw his when he scored in 1993. It's almost subliminal because you had seen those highlights so many times, like in the locker room.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody knows the famous quote, right? But it was real. I mean, he was very intentional on us seeing success and seeing ourselves, you know, winning, right? Doing what it is that we've been working so hard for and so hard on. And, you know, when I say intentional, you know, Omaha was mentioned all the time. You know, also, you know, telling your parents you loved them and thank you was mentioned, you know, literally every day. you know, telling your maker that you love him and thanking him was mentioned every day. And, you know, when you mention those things, you start to visualize those as well. You know, and look, that's a powerful tool. If you get a group of guys all visualizing success at the same time, man, that's pretty powerful.
Talking with former LSU middle infielder Ryan Terrio, member of the 2000 National Championship team. During that season, Ryan, was there a lot of pressure on you guys that, because you knew, or did you know, that Skip's tenure as the head coach was coming to an end here very soon? Or was there a moment during that season that, and as you know, every baseball season has its different adversity. Mm-hmm. Was there something that happened in that year that, because of Skip, he really helped guide you through it?
Man, listen, I've had the pleasure of playing for some elite, you know, high level managers, starting with Skip and Dusty Baker, Lou Piniella, Tony La Russa, Joe Torre, Bruce Bochy. You know, I mean, all these guys are going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, they all had one thing in common, and that was making sure that you believed you could win every single game that you played. That season in 2000, you know, I think we all kind of knew it was getting close to the end, but Skip told us, my recruiting class, that we were going to be his last class. Now, did that mean, you know, my junior year he was leaving, or my, you know, would have been my senior year? But there wasn't any indication that he was going to be going anywhere in 2000, but in 2001 for sure. You know, I mean, we all knew every away trip that we went to, they gave him a present, and, you know, it was kind of his going away tour, which he earned every single bit of that. But now that 2000 year, man, you know, I think it kind of could have gone either way. But in 01 for sure. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, the, one of my favorite moments of that national championship weekend in 2000, the day before the national championship game, Skip was saying, you know, Brad Cressy might go 0-for-3, but he's going to get a hit in his last at bat. And he said, you know, don't take a check swing, wail at it. So my question is, you were on second base when Brad got the single. Did you even look at the third base coach before you ran
Bill,
it there?
Yeah.
Bill Daly.
Yeah, no, Bill and I joke about that all the time. I actually talked to him today. No, I didn't, man. I mean, listen, that's the moment you dream for. If you're Brad, that's the moment that you dream of. And if you're me, you know, with the opportunity to score, I mean, absolutely not. Glenn, you covered me. I'm going to make mistakes. Trust me. That's the thing that I do. But I'm going to make them aggressively, you know. And so there was never a thought of checking up there and staying at third base and letting somebody else score the winning run or maybe not winning. I mean, I was going no matter what Dale did at third base.
And you know, Skip, like, you were just a sophomore in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I remember Skip telling me that you were going to play in the major leagues because you had the speed and the range to play shortstop or second base in the majors. But did he kind of ride you? And you know, he kind of rode the younger players. I know I was just talking to Pat Coogan, and he said that. How much did he get on you in your early years there?
You know, look, like early in my freshman year, I did stupid things like that freshmen do, you know, and he never got on me about physical stuff, but he expected a whole lot. And I think Skip really respected the intensity and the tenacity and the will to win and the hard work. I mean, the intangible things that you really can't teach. I mean, I would say, you know, there was a couple times throughout my tenure at LSU where he really, really got on me, but it was just instances where, like, you know, he just expected more of me. And I think he wanted me to know that I could do it. But let me say this, every single time he did, and this was kind of one of his great character traits, he would tear you down, but he would build you back up. Mm-hmm. You know, he would not continue to beat on you. You know, there was the time where and I made 4 errors in one game, Glenn, you would probably crush me in the paper. But we were playing Tulane as my freshman year, and I made 4 errors. And then after that game, he told me I was the worst infielder he'd ever coached. Like, literally, little league, high school, junior college, there was not an infielder that was worse than me. You know, and of course, everybody loved that, and they were cracking up laughing. And some people that would, you know, that would get to him a little bit. But the next day, I had a pretty good game. He put me back in the lineup. You know, it wasn't I'm going to sit him on the bench for a little while. I right back in the lineup, had a pretty good game. And, you know, after that game, he put his arm around me, gave me the game ball, told me he loved me in front of the whole team.
Wow.
You know, so little things like that where I knew he was in my corner, he just, wanted the best for me.
Well, I didn't rip you. I wasn't covering the team yet. The four errors. that was pre-NIL. I didn't rip young players.
Oh, good. It was bad, buddy.
Brian, I think you mentioned this. I saw you quoted in this, I think, last week on the day that that Skip passed away. The number of fathers, husbands, businessmen, athletes that he shaped, it's countless, isn't it?
You know, I think we would be hard-pressed to find someone that's influenced our city more than Skip Bertman. And I'm being serious. You know, if you think back, I went to the games when I was a kid when nobody was in the stands. But you talk about the economics of LSU baseball, the pride that it has brought to this state. I say Baton Rouge, but really it's the whole state. And then what he's done for actually the game of college baseball economically, you look at some of these stadiums where I don't think they would be that way. You know, and then he's got a 10-year as athletic director where he makes a few extremely influential decisions and pushes some things across the finish line that allowed football and all the sports here, to really, really thrive where they needed him to do that. He was the only one that could. I mean, just ask all the female sport coaches that were around when Skip was here, how important he was. I always say this too, if they know you by your first name, guys, like you did something right.
Yep. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for joining us and talking about Skip Bertman. I know a man that you deeply love and respect, and we really appreciate your time here tonight.
Well, thank you all for giving me some time to do it.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Ryan Terrio. We'll take a break. Doug Thompson will join us when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio.
The East Baton Rouge Parish Library believes that supporting the education of students is good for us all. That's why we provide access to live, in-person, online tutoring through Homework Louisiana. Make available free test preparation tools through Learning Express and Mometrics. Plus, reference tools for all ages. Get a library card. Get free education at ebrpl.com/homework help.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air.
97.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, news and sports director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo. Joining us now, he is a member of the 1997 College World Series championship team. In fact, was the winning pitcher in the championship game that year, and that is Doug Thompson, who joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio as we continue to look back at the great life of Skip Bertman. Doug, thanks a lot for spending some time with us tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing, all things considered, doing pretty good out here watching one of my sons play a little football. So things could be worse for sure, but I appreciate you guys, Glenn and Jeff, giving this opportunity for us to talk about, of course, Coach and, you know, the upcoming events to celebrate his life.
Man, you got so many great stories, and I've always enjoyed in my time that I've known you all the great Skip stories that you have told me. But I think one of my favorite, and we talked a little bit about this at the start of the show, and Glenn mentioned it, how Skip had this ability to see in the future at times. And he did that for you towards the end of the 1997 regular season. You guys are getting pounded by Alabama in the final weekend series of the year. You ended up losing that game 28-2, which is an amazing a score. But what? Tell us, you pick up the story from there. I don't want to give away all the details, but Skip comes out and takes you out of the game, and what happens from there?
Well, first of all, I'll start with it's no coincidence that you bring that story up. It is the one Coach Bertman actually often asks me to retell because it's such an unusual and extraordinary. It's just such an unusual story, especially in today's world, right, where things like that just don't happen anymore. But yes, we went to Alabama for the final weekend of the regular season in 1997. And all we had to do was beat Alabama one time in the three-game series to win the SEC outright.
despite whatever happened across the league. Well, the opening night, our ace, Patrick Coogan, took the mound, one of the best Friday night starters in the history of the program, and he pitched just a spectacular game. They hit a late solo home run, as I recall, like a heartbreaker for us, maybe in the bottom of the eighth type thing, to take a one-run lead. I want to say we lost 3-2 or 2-1. It was really close.
6-4. 6-4.
Okay. Yeah, it was a heartbreaker the way we lost. I knew that it was really close, though. The next day, I was the starter, and the first inning gave up 2 runs. We hit a solo home run in the bottom of the – or the top of the first, Brandon Larson, thanks to Brandon Larson. And then I gave up a grand slam in the second inning. I want to say there was 2 outs. I'm not really sure, but when Coach Burtman came to pull me out of the game, he didn't point to the bullpen immediately. He was still thinking about what he wanted to do, and I was trying to convince him to let me eat up more outs. And I reminded him that we hit a bunch of home runs, and we were going to hit a bunch of home runs, and we're going to come back and win this game, because you guys remember that season. I really did think we were still going to win the game, despite the score being, 6-1 or whatever it was when he pulled me out of the game. But he told me, he said, listen, I'm going to, I've got to give your outfielders a little bit of a rest here. They're tired of running to the fences. and tomorrow I'm going to bring you back to win the SEC. And at that time he made the call to the bullpen. And, as you said, it ended up being 28-2 that day. Actually, he said, you got to trust me. It's going to be bad today. I'm going to bring you back tomorrow and bring the SEC. And I thought, like, that was kind of a weird thing to say. And after the game, when it was 28-2, I was kind of with Conan Horton, the catcher, like, I can't believe he said it was going to be bad today. It's like, he knew,
He did.
And it really was. Well, the next day, to be honest with you, I honestly thought he mentioned the whole, I'll bring you back tomorrow, just to keep me from losing, losing my mind, right?
Yeah,
I was pretty upset being pulled in the second inning, felt like I left the team down, et cetera. And I honest to God, I didn't even put on my spikes that day, to be honest with you. I had my tennis shoes on. And in about the fourth inning, I don't remember exactly what inning it was, to be honest with you, like the pitcher threw 2 balls to the first batter of the end, like ball one, ball two, it was 2-0. And he looked down the dugout and he said, hey, Thompson, did you think I was screwing around yesterday? get your ass down to the bullpen and get loose. And
put your cleats on.
I did.
Put your spikes on.
I threw my spikes on as fast as I could. I sprinted down to the bullpen and started getting loose. And the next thing you know, he was serious. I was really coming in the game. And we had, I don't remember the score, maybe 4-2, maybe 4-1, maybe 5. I don't really remember the details, but I do remember it was still fairly close. And the bases were, I don't remember how many on, but I do remember seeing the Alabama players fighting at the bat rack to be the next batter. Because I wasn't real effective the day before, needless to say.
They're putting him back in?
And, exactly. And Coach Burtman said, you got one hit and you're out. And I didn't hear exactly what he said, so I asked him to repeat himself. And he did that in a very colorful way, so I was crystal clear on what he said. And there were 2 guys, Brian Daugherty and Chris Demui, already warming up in the bullpen. And before I even threw a warm-up, he came back to the mound and said, one hit, and I'm going to pull you out of the game. Do you hear me? I said, yeah, I got it. Okay, so tell people, you know how they always say you got to visualize, and the only way for success, you got to visualize success. Well, that's not necessarily true, because I truly was visualizing throwing one pitch, giving up a line drive right back up the middle, and getting pulled from the game. I honestly thought that was going to be what happened, right? Well, I somehow get out of that inning and all the way to the ninth without allowing a hit. Now,
wow.
I don't remember being very – well, let me finish, Jeff. I don't remember being particularly dominant. We had a great offense, but we had some incredible athletes and some guys that could really make plays on that team too. So I think there was some luck, maybe some line drives right at people, et cetera. But I want to say it was 4 or 5 innings after he put me in the game. There were 2 outs in the ninth inning.
I can vividly remember thinking like, wow, I'm actually going to be out here on the mound for a championship. This is going to be amazing. And I gave up a ground ball in the sixth hole to Brandon Larson, fielded it on a backhand, made a beautiful throw to first base. Eddie stretched all the way out to catch it, and a little home cook and the umpire called Joe Caruso safe at first with an infield single, two outs in the bottom of the ninth. So I towed the rubber again thinking, I'm going to finish this thing, and here comes Skip. and he's taking his sweet time. He still hasn't made a call to the bullpen when he gets to the mound, which, you know, if you know baseball, you know, as a starting pitcher for a pitcher, you know, for sure you might have a chance, right, to talk him into this thing. Right. Well, of course I did. And I'm doing everything I coach. Let me finish this thing. You know, I want to win a championship, but come on, coach, let me finish. And he's looking down at the bullpen and he's sucking through his teeth. You know, how he kind of used to think through what's going on. He was taking in the moment. And he said, Dougie boy, do you remember yesterday? This is in front of 8,000 people. Alabama is ranked number 2 in the country. We're ranked number, like, this is the biggest game in America.
Yeah.
And LSU is about, is on the brink. We're one out away from winning the SEC championship, right? And he says, as calmly as he possibly can in the middle of all of this, he says, do you remember yesterday when I told you that I was going to bring you back to win the SEC today? And I said, yes, sir. Thinking, of course, he's going to say, let's do it, Dougie boy. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, do you remember today when I told you I was going to take you out of the game after you gave up a hit? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, Dougie boy, we've got to see if Demui can close this thing out, go ice your arm, and get ready for a championship celebration. That's exactly how that went down.
Oh, man.
And he pulled me out of the game with a guy at first, and Chris Demui came in and slammed the door shut for us to win. And you know what? Something tells me, guys, if he'd have kept me in that game, I would have given up a 2-run home run to probably probably lose the lead. There's just something about the moves he made when he made them. But that is truly one of the stories,
yes,
Skip would often reference at lunches and dinner, because, again, it's an unusual thing to bring a starter back in the next day.
Yeah.
And then the way it all worked out, he predicted it and it happened. And there's only one guy I know that can do that.
Hey, Doug, do you mind if we take a quick little break here and then come back and we'll talk a little bit more? That's just an unbelievable story, and it gets better and better every time I hear it. It's just a great story. Doug Thompson joining us here on Tiger Rag Radio. Let's take a quick break and continue our conversation as we continue to remember Skip Bertman, one of the best to ever be a part of LSU.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio as we continue to remember the great Skip Bertman. Of course, there will be a celebration of life ceremony a week from tonight, Tuesday night, the same time we're on air here at Tiger Rag Radio. But tonight we're – and we'll talk a little football a little bit later on and maybe some other things, but we certainly want to dedicate most of tonight's show to Skip Bertman and Doug Thompson joining us for another segment. And Doug, again, a terrific story about that final weekend, regular season in Tuscaloosa against Alabama. But what kind of impact has he had on your life? And I know you're thinking about him a lot more now that he's gone, but, you know, just during the course of your adult life, you know, how many times, you know, a situation would arise, whether it's with your kids or whatever it may be professionally, and you would say, well, you can almost hear Skip Bertman in your head.
No, I mean, you know, Jeff, I haven't done, this is the first time I've gone on with anybody to talk about things like that. I'm not real sure that I'm even in a place to put that into words, but I will say I'm trying to focus on the fact that I had a special relationship with Coach, like so many others. I'm trying to focus on the fact that my kids got to know him and have many, many conversations with him and got to visit with him at his house and understand who he is, because understanding who he is helps them understand me more, because their whole life they've heard, right now, my high school son, right? We still talk to this day about the, anything you vividly imagine, sincerely believe. I've always told my son belief Coach Berman would tell you, belief is the hardest one, especially in baseball, to continue. And so he is, it's been infinite and immeasurable in terms of how he's affected my life. He's the most important man in my life, right there with my dad. And here's the weird thing, man. Here's what I've been struggling with the last 4 or 5 days. a lot of former teammates and my buddies, are aware that over the last several years, I've been around Coach a lot and been there to help him in and out of places and driven him places and things of that nature. But what's been really difficult is, seeing a guy like Brandon Larson's name pop up on my phone. I couldn't answer it the first time because I was choked up and I couldn't talk. And it wasn't because the only reason was because I know how bad he's hurting. And I know how much he loved that guy, and then vice versa, right? I know Coach Berman cared a great deal for him, but it's really awkward to answer that call and that guy be concerned with me and how I'm doing when I know he's as gutted as I am, right? And that goes for everyone. I mean, this isn't just people that played for him. This is people that worked in the athletic department for him. It's really, honestly, for pretty much anyone who's ever met him, because he's never met someone that he didn't make feel like $1 million. And he was the best at that. And he loved people and he loved to be around people. And he never greeted someone half-heartedly. And for me, that's the things that I want to be better at. I want to be better at the way he treated people. What I'm most proud of is to be a small part of what he was most proud of, which was the last 30 years of his life, really constantly being surrounded by his teammates, and I mean, by his former players, and by coaches that coach with him, and people that he worked at the athletic department with. I mean, Verge and Jay and many, many others from the athletic department would frequently go pick up Coach Berman and bring him down to lunch at Mike Anderson's. By the way, the people at Mike Anderson's, Mr. Mike, all of them have literally made that his home away from home for the past 3 or 4 years, and they treated him like an absolute king. And those people, if anybody from that group is listening, sincerely from the bottom of my heart, and hundreds of teammates and people that have had lunches and dinners there with them, thank you for rolling out the red carpet and making sure that Skip Berman is taken care of. And I'm going to miss those things, but I'm proud to be part of that. And the reason is because I heard him say hundreds of times that was what, of all the championships and all the wins, the relationships that he still had 40 years later with players was what he was most proud of. It's what, if he were to brag about anything, it would never be 870 wins or 5 national championships. It would be the relationship that he had with his boys. So I'm trying to really focus on those things more so than how sad I am because of how much I'm going to miss him. And I know a lot of people are trying to kind of struggle through that. And Jeff and Glenn, the same with you guys, right? Like it feels awkward for me to talk to you guys and not ask you how you're doing, right? Because this man tremendously affected all of us in such an incredibly positive way. And I'm just going to miss the heck out of him. And he was my mentor. He was like a grandfather. And the last 4 or 5 years of his life, he sincerely became one of my best friends, if not my best friend. And for that, there's no way. That I can let myself shed any tears anymore, at least. I'm just trying to focus on how unbelievably lucky I was.
Yeah, very, very well said, Doug. And the the amazing thing too is Skip also kept up with those guys from Miami Beach High who won the state title like in 1970. You know, those guys were at the games sometimes in his last years, and then they were at some of the reunions too, and all over the documentary on Skip, the Hold the Rope documentary. So yeah, he really, it's amazing how often he would get called by players too, just out of the blue. Doug, I remember interviewing him at his kitchen, and oh, Doug's on the phone, or Chad's on the phone, or Warren's on the phone. You know, it's amazing.
It's nonstop, and man, I'm telling you, when I would be visiting with him, watching a game, and those phone calls would come in to watch him light up for every single guy. Every single guy, he would answer the phone, and whatever. What for me, it was Dougie boy, right? Like he had that for everyone, right? And he made everyone feel so incredibly special. As a coach, he did it a little bit differently than others in terms of motivation, but he was the greatest of all time at that. So, look, we could literally talk about Skip Bertman, his legacy, his impact on my life, my teammates' lives, his family, the university, the people of Louisiana. I mean, we could go as deep as you want, really. But the truth is what I'd like to talk about, while I'm sure that you guys have Todd and Ryan coming on, and I want those guys to be able to come on too, unless you can figure out a way for all of us to stay, because I'll stay all night and talk about Skip. But there's an event coming up on the 25th, and I know that it's out there and it's public, and I'm so glad for that, because, man, we're sitting here talking about this man, and I don't think it's debatable. Glenn, you've watched a lot of LSU sports. Jeff, you the same. Like, I don't think it's debatable that any one player has ever impacted our university, certainly our athletic department, but the university, or any one person, I should say, more than Skip Bertman. And I even think there's some debate there in terms of the state. Like, I don't know that many people have influenced or represented our state on the national level as long as Skip Bertman has, right? So he's an icon for our state, obviously for the university. But, man, I'm telling you, working with the family and several former players and so many wonderful people, you know, starting with the people at LSU, Verge, as you would imagine, Skip Bertman means the world to Verge. And it didn't take long for us to be, or the family, I should say, to be very clear that LSU was going to do whatever was they were asked to do to celebrate this man. So at the PMAC on the 25th, the doors will open for the general public at 6:00. Are we being cut off here?
That's the music. That's the music.
All right.
We got to take one more break here, and then we got Todd coming up. You want to keep him on?
Can he stay on while Todd's on?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
If you don't mind, Doug. All right, let's take this break, and then we'll wrap up hour one.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for staying.
Let's go. We now return to Tiger Rag Radio.
All right, this has been a great first hour here as we reminisce and honor and think about the man that, as Doug Thompson eloquently just said, probably no one has had a bigger impact on the LSU Athletic Department and LSU and the Baton Rouge community, as Ryan Terrio said as our first guest here tonight, than Skip Bertman. And again, we are dedicating tonight's show. We'll get into a little bit of football talk as well. We already had Ryan Terrio on. We got to hit this top of the hour break, and then when we come back, Doug's going to stay on the line with us, and then we'll also have Todd Walker. He will join us as well. So stay tuned as we continue to remember one of the best to ever do it, and that was Skip Bertman. So you're listening to Tiger Rag Radio. We take our top of the hour break, and when we come back, we look forward to reminiscing even more about Skip with Doug Thompson and Todd Walker after this top of the hour break.